Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 76 of Season 7 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham, A Movie a Day, and the Shepherd of the Lamb. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Thanks, Rob, for having me. I'm glad to be here. Glad to join you once again for our trip through Die Hard Land. This time, it's That's not right. as hard. It's more with a vengeance.
Exactly. All right. So minute 76 begins with Simon hanging up and ends with Zeus using his keen eyesight. So first of all, do you remember when you first saw this movie?
Oh, yeah. I saw it when it opened in 1995, saw it at a theater that doesn't exist anymore in Diamond Bar, California. Went with my family. It was a kind of a awkward time in my life because my father was living with us and he had Alzheimer's and it was tough to get him in and out. And I took him with us to the movies and he sat through it pretty well, but he did have a couple of incidents where he had to get up and wander around a little bit while it was going on. So I had to go back and see it again immediately afterwards because I did miss a few minutes here and there. But remember pretty well.
Okay. And it's actually funny that you mentioned your father because your father will come up later this week. Okay. actually, it comes up today. So it's actually the perfect episode for you to bring that up. But we'll get there at the end. It's at the end of today. All right, so we left things off on Friday with John and Zeus having commandeered a BMW and trying to find the dump trucks. And we also had Simon giving an order to someone about whether they should be waiting around for John or not. And, you know, there was a lot of tension in the cab of this dump truck between Simon and Targo, which continues into today because, you know, Simon basically hangs up the walkie talkie that he's talking on. And then he turns to Targo to try and calm him down and says, "Relax, Targo. If he's still alive, he won't be talking to anybody." So I find the dialogue here very strange. Like, why would he say if he's still alive? Is he like, you think he's referring to the fact? I mean, Simon on Friday tried calling, you know, the four Germans that are all you know, dead on the bottom of the elevator shaft, and, you know, didn't get any response from them. Is he basically implying here that these guys must have inflicted enough damage on John, even if he was able to kill them? Do you think that's what he's referring to?
I think it's just uncertainty. If you don't know exactly what's going on, you try and cover all of your bases.
Yeah, but for him to say he won't be talking to anybody, meaning, what do you mean? Why won't he be talking to anybody? Because he's been injured or because the whole radio system is down?
Oh, I think the radio system being down is the thing that's going, because that's his plan at that moment, is to jam up everything.
So he's basically saying even if John's alive, he's not going to be able to do anything because he's not going to be able to get in touch with anybody. That's more or less your interpretation of it. Okay. No, because I was looking at it from the perspective that, you know, he has a lot more confidence in his men that if they were having a fight with John, then they would have at least, even if they would have died, they would have somehow disabled John or something to that effect. You know, that was my interpretation of it. Again, it could be either way. They both make sense.
All right. I'm glad that they both make sense to you. Mine makes sense to me, so it's a little bit harder for me to see your perspective. But I'm good with it, you know, however you see it. That's good.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, that's what we do here. We take these things to try to make some hypotheses about what is meant by characters doing certain things. Yeah, So I sometimes look at the ambiguity of it and say, okay, you know, is this what they're talking about? Or maybe they're talking about something else, you know, and Targo like takes the radio and like slams it down in front of him. Like, you can tell he's still pissed about this whole thing. You know, he's saying to himself, he should have listened to me. I told him to get rid of him at the beginning and that would have been it.
Everybody's got a different agenda on this one.
Yeah, for sure. And then Simon looks at him and basically, you know, says, all right, it's the next turn off, which, you know, again, I think he's doing that just to piss Targo off a little bit more. Because you would think that Targo already know, like, you think they've already planned out where they're going. Like, they don't have ways, obviously. But, you know, Targo is driving. He doesn't need Simon to tell him, you know, where the plan is going to take them, I would assume.
Rob, if you've never driven with another human being in the car, I could understand why you're saying that. But if you've ever driven with another human being in the car, you know that inevitably they want to start giving directions and telling you what to do. You don't have to be a backseat driver. You could be a front seat driver. You can be a next to sitting next to me driver. Everybody wants to be in control. And that's what's going on here. And of course, Simon wants to be in the most control.
Right. Well, Simon is the one in control. That you know, I've been in the car with my wife, with other people who tell me, you know, these type of things. Yes, that is true.
They give you the directions that you were about to follow anyway.
Okay, we'll go with that. Yes. Exactly. So he just like throws it out there as he picks up, you know, a cell phone to make a call. And then we see that he dials. And then the shot changes and we see a DJ, you know, radio disc jockey answering the call. Now, I don't know about you. Have you ever tried calling a radio station?
I have indeed. And in fact, These were my notes on this very subject. There is no way you get through that quickly.
There's no direct line.
No.
Yeah.
There's always a screener. They're looking for particular kinds of calls. This is an afternoon, you know, it's a DJ, but it's a talk show DJ, not a music DJ. And so
it's a talk radio.
They have particular subjects that they're talking about. Simon would not be able to get through unless he did some BSing to the screener first.
Correct. Do you know where the term disc jockey comes from?
Well, I assume that it had something to do with the radio stations in the first place. Somebody just, you know, created it as a description of what was going on. But I know that you have an answer.
Yes, I do. It actually was coined by Walter Winchell in 1935.
No, Walter Winchell, a famous newscaster, broadcaster, bon yes. vivant, you know, wise guy around town, you know.
That's right. And so basically the word disc, D-I-S-C, refers to, you know, a record, either a phonograph or gramophone record and stuff like that. And that was how, at the time, they would describe radio personalities who they were being introduced to, you know, while they were on the air and stuff like that. So the whole idea was, okay, he's a disc jockey. This is, you know, the guy who's playing the records and stuff like that, which obviously today no one plays records. It's all digitalized in most situations.
Well, it's funny because in the last, even before the digitalization, the music wasn't really on records anymore. It was on cartridges that they played.
Correct. Yeah, it changed.
But nobody calls them cartridge jockeys.
Well, because they already had they didn't change the term. You know, what are they going to call them now? They're going to call them digital jockeys?
Streaming jockeys, I don't know.
Streaming jockeys. Like okay, it could be. Streaming jockeys makes sense. No, you never know. And so the guy who answers, you know, this talk show host, did you recognize him?
I did not.
Okay. He actually is a real talk show host from New York named Elvis Duran. I mean, he mentions his name. He goes, "Hi, it's Elvis Duran. You're on the air. What's up?" So again, you know, as you and I both pointed out, it's a little strange the fact that he has absolutely no idea what this caller is going to be talking about and things like that. So he was born on August 5th, 1964. So he's currently he just recently turned 60. He's from your neck of the woods. He's from Texas. Your neck of the woods now.
Now, yes.
Exactly. I know. But,
you're going to tell me what kind of show he had.
He had a morning show called the Elvis Duran and the Morning Show on Z100, Y100, Q102, 107.5 KISS FM. And he had a show Mondays through Fridays, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And it was broadcast, across the country at a certain point. I mean, he changed, stations throughout the course of his career. His real name is Barry Brian Cope, C-O-P-E. And basically, I mean, it's a show that is syndicated right now. So that station that he's on right now is Z100 in New York. He started doing this stuff back in the 80s. He had a show, and he had a show in Atlanta, he had a show in Houston. Like he's been all over the place with the different types of shows that he's done. The current show that he's doing, he's been doing since April 1996, which means that when this movie came out and when this movie takes place, he wasn't there yet. So it's very interesting that that at this point that they used him, even though he wasn't part of Z100 at the time.
Do they identify the radio station in the clip? I don't remember
no,
that.
No, 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 not at all.
So he no. had a radio show before he was on Z100, and yes. Otherwise they wouldn't have put him in as the on-air personality. And by the way, that might be a better term for somebody who doesn't play records. They're not a disc jockey. They're an on-air personality. His looked like it was a talk show. So he's the on-air personality for the talk show. And I don't know, what things were like in 1995 or 94 when they were filming this in New York, but most talk shows had they had a particular kind of format. They were political in nature. They were local in nature. They were comedy based kinds of things.
Usually the morning shows are comedy based.
Morning shows are entertainment based. But I didn't get the impression that his in the scene that we're looking at, that it was a morning show. It looked to me like it was afternoon drive time.
Right. It's not a morning show because. Right now it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 1:30, So again, I mean, it's fictional what they're doing here. I mean, according to the research that I did, he was actually, part of a radio station in Austin, Texas in 1991. So I don't know where he was because he only started at Z100 in 96. So I was trying to figure out like where he was in between. So that I don't know. My assumption is he was probably in New York, or they decided, hey, we're just gonna, we'll give him this this little spotlight in the movie, and that's it, So, but I like the fact that they use a real DJ or a real radio on air personality. It adds more to the whole thing, even though, as we know, there's no way that he was able to get through so easily.
Yeah, and it should be easy for him to play himself.
Yes, he's actually been in two movies and one TV show. He was in this movie. He was in Sharknado 3 as himself. And he was on an episode of Law and Order Special Victims. When Simon starts talking to him, and he goes, first of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. And I love that once again, he's changing his accent, for the whole thing. And, we see Elvis drinking, taking a sip of his coffee at the time, as he's being flattered by Simon. He goes, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time. He goes, thank you. What do you want to talk about? He says, well, all those cop cars screaming around everywhere, you know what they're up to? And like, he pauses for a second as he's getting ready to say it. And he goes, there's a bomb in a school.
And by the way, that 7 second delay would probably be where Elvis hits the button and cuts the call off, because that's exactly the kind of stuff that they don't want to put on their air. Simon wants it on the air, but the radio station is going to be going, they got to be very careful about stuff like that.
That's right. And then he says, and I never caught this before. Simon says, my cousin's a cop. You know, meaning he's explaining like where he's gotten this information.
Why he's got insider information. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And we get a prominent shot in a, I guess maybe it's a deli or a butcher shop or something like that. And we see all of these different products on a counter. So how many of those products are you familiar with? I mean, I can tell you what the products are.
Okay. You tell me what the products are.
Okay,
you got, I will tell you what I'm familiar with.
Bumblebee tuna.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay, Haddon House anchovies and capers.
Nope.
Okay, you have Bumblebee pink salmon.
I've
seen. You have strawberry granola bars.
I've seen that kind of thing. I don't know that I've seen the particular product.
Right.
Was there a brand placement there?
No, you can't see the brand with the... it's something free.
Probably sugar free. Like
health.
That.
It says maybe Health Valley. Maybe that's possible. Don't know. Crino's imported tahini.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Okay, then you have something free again from the same brand as the other one. I think it says Health Valley crackers. And okay. then you have cans of Nine Lives cat food.
Cat food, yes.
Where it says you see chicken nuggets and gravy. And then you have one other thing there that says nice product of Portugal. And you know, from what I'm able to find on the internet, those are also like a can of sardines type of thing. So it's an interesting array of things that you would have, you know, on a deli counter. You'd have, you know, tuna, salmon, tahini, granola bars, cat food, and, you know, more sardines.
Seems like they have an odd selection of impulse products that they're trying to pass off at the deli.
That's right. It's very, very, very interesting. The way that all just, you know, it's all just lumped in there, and they give us a few, like they give 2 or 3 seconds where you can see all of these things. So, you know, it's very, very interesting the way that they did it. And we're not going to go into all the various food products that are here, even though I do have information about them. But I'm just going to ask a few questions about the Bumblebee. Do you know how far back the company goes?
I do
for
not.
Bumblebee tuna. It goes all the way back to 1899, which shocked me that it's been around for so long.
Well, it's interesting that they've had the name Bumblebee for that long. It doesn't surprise me that some cannery has been around that long.
Okay, now I never thought about the fact that you know that they've had canned tuna for so long. You know, that's the thing that got me.
Well, that sounds about the right time that people started doing those kinds of things. You know, the late 1800s.
Well, I guess whether we think it is or isn't, it doesn't matter because it is. You know. Okay, so then you have Nine Lives cat food. When do you think that was that company started making you know, canning their goods?
My guess would be sometime in the 1940s, but that's just a guess.
Okay, 1959.
Okay.
And over the years it was owned by Starkist, Big Heart Pet Brands, and Jam Smucker, and now it's owned by Post Consumer Brands.
So it's right up there with all the cereal products.
Yeah, I mean, but basically, I for me, it jumped out the fact that basically Starkist was the company that started it.
It's probably where they put all their leftovers and their names.
Very possibly. So during the 70s and early 80s, the mascot of Nine Lives was Sylvester the Cat.
Was it Morris the Cat?
Oh, no, I'm talking about in the 70s and 80s. Afterwards, Morris the Cat. Oh, wait, was Morris the Cat from Nine Lives?
I don't remember. If I was naming cats off of television, Sylvester would have been the cartoon cat I would have remembered, and Morris the cat would have been the live action cat that I remembered. So it's got to be right. One of those two.
Well, this one is definitely Sylvester. Morris the cat, yes, it was for Nine Lives also, but that must have come later on. You know, at that point when they did, because they had commercials with Sylvester with him saying that, Nine Lives was worth risking your life for. And it says in 1986, they replaced him with Morris the Cat.
All right. There. So at the time this movie takes place and the cans of cat food that are presented there, they were endorsed by Morris.
That's right.
Not Sylvester.
That is correct.
Morris, the celebrity cat.
Exactly. We hear like the butcher say, "Here you go, my dear." And then you see that whoever the woman was has just torn out of the store. You know, she's run out of there as quickly as possible. And we continue to hear Simon say, "Somebody put a big bomb in a school somewhere." And then we see these businessmen that are sitting in some sort of meeting, and one of them continues talking about, just mentioning numbers. You go 7, 5, and 207. And at the same, I love the way that they have these guys having their own conversation, but we can hear from the radio Simon.
Yeah, this is one of the things that is obviously just a movie moment, because if they're having a meeting, they wouldn't have the talk radio on in the background. That's of correct. Their meeting.
Well, maybe it's important for them to hear Elvis Duran. Who knows? You know. And then Simon says, only they don't know which one. So they're searching all of them. And then one of the guys in the meeting shushes the other guy and he goes, and we continue to hear Simon say, every school in the metropolitan area. And then one of them goes, hold. And then another one screams, Doris, Annie, Doris, get a hold of my wife. You know, I mean, I like the way that they're starting to show the beginning of the panic here.
Yeah.
With, with these characters. And then, I mean, the panic just gets even greater, because then we're back in and we get to meet Wanda again. And she just screams, Charlie. Half the goddamn city just called 911.
That's apparently half the city was listening to Elvis's radio show.
That's right. He's much more popular than in the diehard world. He's much more popular than in the real world, where half of New York is listening to him at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
They probably just couldn't afford Howard Stern.
Probably. It's probably true. But does Howard Stern, is he on in the afternoon or is he only on in the mornings, maybe?
He was on in the mornings in those days. I don't even know, you know, now he's not on terrestrial radio. He's on satellite radio. So I don't know if it's on a particular schedule or not.
Right. Okay. Could be. And then we're back in the car with John and Zeus. And they give us a great shot of the road ahead of them. You know, as they're going, and then they're gone. What? They're gone. And then John goes, "Who's this guy? Houdini?" So that was the little bit of a hint that I gave at the beginning of this episode
about why my father might come up as a talking point.
That's right. That's right. And this is not the first time. This is I'm trying to remember which movie it was that we talked about that we discussed about your parents, or maybe it was with Amanda.
Could have been
that I was talking about it. No, with Amanda, I think we were talking about with your mother's ability to get out of
The straitjacket escape.
The straitjacket escape, exactly. Yeah. Okay, that's right. That's right, because when Amanda was on last season and for It's a Wonderful Life, and they were talking there about a straitjacket, so it happened to be in her week. So yeah, she mentioned that she had a grandmother that would always thrill everybody with her escape attempts from a straitjacket.
There you go. Right.
But you and I have discussed your father also.
Yes, yes, we have.
I'm trying to remember in which movie. we talked about it with him, you know, so that, but if I remember correctly, we actually talked about Houdini back then also. Is that possible?
It wouldn't surprise me, but you know what? You're asking the wrong guy. My short-term memory is not as good as my long-term memory. So if we were to talk about a conversation that we had back in 1978, I'd be on it all over the place. You're talking about something that might have happened in the last 3 years. You got me.
Okay. So in other words, I shouldn't send you to go to any national debates at this point.
Not at this particular point, you know. you know, at least I wouldn't be staring blankly, but I would be scratching my head going, I can't say, I can't remember.
Exactly. Okay. At least you'd admit it. That's what you're telling me. And then Zeus goes down there. He points to, you know, below the highway that they're on, you know, that he's able to see another dump truck that's down there. Yeah, I mean, I like the way that they do this. You know, you don't need to understand New York geography to completely understand everything that's going on here. And, you know, I think it's done in a great way.
It's fine. Yeah. I'm not overly familiar with New York geography. I know it a little bit because I've been there a couple of times in the last year. But that's, you know, you can see what it is they're doing there. You know, they're on an overpass. There's a highway underneath them, and there's a truck down there. So that appears to be what they're after.
Correct. We know that they're on the FDR, you know, where, you know, trucks are not allowed. So, yeah. All right. So that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else that you wanted to discuss about this episode?
Yeah, that was it. I just like the scene where, you know, she cries out, half the city just called 911. I like the instant, you know, panic that comes on there. I think that's probably reflective of a lot of people going, wait a second, what's going on? And they don't always know what 911 is for. So they're calling especially for information.
Especially back then.
Yeah, and it's going to do exactly what Simon wants. It's going to jam everything up. It's going to make the city a mess, and police communications are going to be all screwed up.
Yep, that's the plan. And the plan seems to be working at this point.
It does.
Yeah. All right, great. So let's go into the script. Simon in the lead dump truck sits with Targo, who drives. Targo grins, grim as usual, looks at his watch. We're behind schedule. Simon says, they know nothing, Matthias, and if they do, they'll do exactly what we want. Close the bridges and tunnels. That can be made more difficult. Simon, smiling, picks up his cellular phone as his truck enters the aqueduct tunnel. And then it says, the sound booth of a radio station. A disc jockey on air sits with his feet propped up. A song is playing. His phone flashes. He picks it up. His name is The Flash. He goes, K-Rock, this is The Flash. He reacts, dropping his feet to the floor. You got to be kidding me. And then a shot jumps to the West Village, a Greek delicatessen, a Greek proprietor behind the counter. A customer comes charging in. Hey, Theo, I just heard it on the radio. Some crazy bastards put a bomb in one of our schools. A lady customer hears this, alarmed. What? Central Park, two guys are jogging, one listening to a Walkman. The guy with the Walkman stops, rips off his headphones. Jesus Christ, there's a bomb in one of the schools in New York. So, again, this is terrible. The way they do it in the movie is so much more interesting, you know, than to have this guessing game, you know, of Simon pretending to, you know, making this phone call. It's better that we get to hear the conversation with the disc jockey and the people listening to everything, you know, transpiring on air, basically.
It's simpler, it's cleaner, it's more visual the way they did it in the film.
Zeus say, McLean, they're looking through the windshield, the FDR ahead, the dump trucks are gone, they've vanished. McLean then says, where'd they go? McLean and Zeus look around frantically, the dump trucks have seemingly vanished. Zeus then says, down there, Zeus points and McLean looks. A single dump truck is wheeling down a side street off the FDR. And then they have this small little scene that takes place with Cobb that's not in the movie. Henry Rollins, the NYPD captain of traffic police is on the phone with Arthur Cobb. I don't have the personnel to close a fucking popsicle stand. You took them already. All right, all right. I can give you 100 guys, 5 to 10 for every bridge and tunnel. Cobb's on the phone with Rollins, says, I love you, Henry. Cobb hangs up and dials another number. Janie, put me through to the FBI. FDR Expressway, McLean and Zeus are panicking. McLean says, when's the next exit? Zeus says, 110th. And that's where that minute will end. So, again, I understand why they cut out this little scene with Cobb and, you know, and Rollins. It's not necessary at all. It doesn't add anything to what we already know. So it makes sense. So every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed films. You only have 11 to choose from, but I have faith in you, Richard, that you're going to be able to find at least five that you've seen.
Oh, yeah, that was not hard to do. And they're probably the ones that you've heard from people many times before, but that's okay. So have you gotten a rollerball one?
No.
Good.
Sounds people like have I'm
better
about
taste
to.
Than that. No. I was just curious if anybody is, you know, trying to be an outlier and they said, well, let's go with that one.
No, the truth is Rollerball and 13th Warrior are the only two that don't have any hits. Nomads and Basic each have one hit. And then all the rest are, and Medicine Man also has one hit. And that's it.
You know, well, I might have gone 13th Warrior, but there are so many other choices that are so much better. So
okay,
it was easy to do. So you want them in order, number five?
Start with number five and work your way up, please.
Number five is the Thomas Crown Affair with Pierce Brosnan, Rene Russo, Dennis Leary. I think it's a very stylish remake of the Steve McQueen film. I liked it a lot. I thought it. They've got that great sequence with the hats and the briefcases and the doppelgangers all moving around. I just enjoyed that movie immensely. It's also quite sexy, so it's great. Number four is Die Hard with a Vengeance, the one that we're talking about here on the show. I think it's it's a far superior sequel to Die Hard 2, Die Harder. I like this movie much better than I like the second movie. I think it helps because McTiernan is back for this particular episode. Not to disparage Rennie Harlan. I know that there are people out there who would give me a hard time if I did so, and I'm not going to suggest that there's anything wrong with Rennie Harlan. I just think this is a better story and much more interesting. Number three is Predator. You know, it's hard to go wrong when you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger as your lead and you've got Carl Weathers in the cast and Jesse Ventura and all those, you know, macho guys that are filling out the jungle there. And we've got an alien who's hunting the hunters, so to speak. That's great. Number two on my list, if you've got a film with Sean Connery in it and it's not Medicine Man, then it's got to be The Hunt for Red October. The Hunt for Red October is a submarine movie. This is set in the height of the Cold War. It's got a very interesting plot. It's one of those Jack Ryan stories from Tom Clancy. I think it was the first adaptation of all of those kinds of movies, and it's yes. Excellent. I think it's very good. And number one, of course, is Die Hard itself, the one that started it all for us.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much for that list. So, Richard, would you like to tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Oh, yeah, it's easy to find me. And my personal blog site is Kirkham A Movie A Day. You could find that at kirkhamclass.blogspot.com. I have a doppelganger site also on WordPress. And if you just search kirkhamamovieaday.com, you'll find that one. The WordPress site is not as complete as my Blogger site. So if you're looking for additional links to some of the other pages that I do, you want to go to the first site. Also, I'm the host of the Lambcast, a weekly podcast for the Large Association of Movie Blogs. And you can find us at the Large Association, largeassmovieblogs.com. And if you search on Facebook or Twitter for Lambcast, you'll find us as well. We've got weekly shows with multiple other podcasters and bloggers talking about all kinds of movies The most recent thing that we did was Horizon, which is the new Kevin Costner film. So we had some very enthusiastic responses in contrast to the critical comments that we've seen about the movie. The people on the show this week were very enthusiastic about the movie.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, everybody.
Marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.